UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Over the last two decades, there's been an increasing interest in new techniques for the treatment of coronary chronic total occlusion, which have success rates that are much higher than that of a few years ago. My guest today is Dr. Mark Sass. He's an associate professor in interventional cardiology at UAB Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Sass. So explain a little bit about chronic total occlusion and speak about the evolution of what had been done to treat it in the past.
Yeah, this has been a very, very long journey in interventional cardiology. In the past, like basically before there was a percutaneous option for anything, most chronic total occlusions were treated with bypass surgery. So if a cardiologist took a catheterization, they'd see even one total occlusion and the patient had significant symptoms. Sometimes those patients would go for one vessel bypass, and I even see that now on some referral angiograms. I'll see that a patient got one vessel bypass for an occlusion, which currently would not be necessarily indicated if it was sent to a center that could open them. And then the interesting evolution actually comes from, I always find this absolutely fascinating, is that the push towards doing these totally occluded arteries percutaneously came from the Japanese. The Japanese have this idea that the body cannot be violated. And actually, I gave a grand rounds on this and people were fascinated by it, it's called this concept of this gomai, that they cannot have their body violated. So a lot of the impetus for this came out of Japan, and it's actually gotai, G-O-T-A-I, and it means the five body parts, meaning to keep the body intact during life and death. So in Asian cultures, that there has been a push that you don't want to open the body because maybe the spirit will leave. So coronary artery bypass surgery, while it is done in all of Asia, there's a certain subset of the patients who just don't want their chest open. So that's where the impetus came, and the Japanese were the pioneers with that, both in the technique and then in the wires that developed that could open these arteries. So it was came out of kind of a very patient-centered, like, I don't want my chest opened, I don't want bypass surgery, can you find a better way? So that's where it came into fruition, that this whole idea of chronic total occlusion, stenting and angioplasty. So the Japanese were the pioneers of that, and then Americans took over this area, not necessarily took over it, but adopted a kind of a much more efficient and quick way of approaching these. And this is the new hybrid protocol where you can go antegrade, meaning forward, or retrograde, meaning backward, or dissect the vessel and get back into the true lumen of the vessel with newer techniques and newer equipment. And again, the industry has responded very nicely in giving us new wires, new equipment that will help us do these better, increasing the success rate from in the past probably about 50% now to probably in very, very experienced hands in the 90% range, and in most people like 70 to 80%. So that's where the impetus for CTO angioplasty, as it's called. So, I mean, bypass is still the gold standard for people with multivessel disease. Bypass is still the standard for people with multiple total occlusions. But sometimes if you just have a single vessel, or the patient is too sick, or their patient preference is to have a non super invasive approach like coronary artery bypass surgery, then now we have this option for people. So it is interesting. It goes back to the way past, goes back to the dawning of bypass surgery, goes back to the beginnings of just basic angioplasty, and now we're kind of in advanced angioplasty and stenting techniques.
What a very interesting history on CTO, Dr. Sass. So is there a time frame for CTO development? Speak a little bit about the clinical presentation.
The clinical presentation of the patient or of the techniques?
No, first of the patient.
Oh, of the patient. So basically the one thing that is the mantra of all cardiologists in this area is you shouldn't do chronic total occlusions ad hoc. These are patients who meaning that you do them at the same setting. So usually a patient will present to you in the clinic with significant angina that is resistant to medical therapy. So medical therapy including standard anti-anginal medications, including beta blockers, calcium channel blockers, nitrates, and a unique novel agent called ranolazine. So there's four main anti-anginal agents, and we try to treat the patient medically in the beginning just because CTO angioplasty does have a higher rate of complications. So if a patient has a stress test and symptoms that are kind of going towards, oh, yeah, there's one vessel disease, you do a catheterization. And if the catheterization shows a total occlusion, like I said, you don't do an ad hoc. You say, all right, we see a CTO, and we have to either treat them more aggressively with medical therapy and with our standard four anti-anginal therapies, or we set up another time to go at after that vessel to make sure to kind of plan it out. These things need intense planning. Usually we try to do this with two operators who are both experienced because it does require sometimes multiple brains in the cath lab room at the same time to get through these. A lot of the really, really expert CTO operators in the country do it with two people. I've done like hundreds, and then there's people who that's all they do for a living. And there's thousands. They do thousands in their career. So after that initial presentation, and then the planning, and then the catheterization, and then the planning stage, then you have to again talk it over with the patient. How much are these symptoms bothering you? How much more medications can we push? And it's all based on really patient symptomatology, because CTOs have never ever been proven to extend life or prevent heart attack, and the two new trials also prove that, but they do help symptoms, and in the patients that I have done had remarkably helped their symptoms.
Well, so that's the question, is to treat or not to treat. And
yes,
if you are dealing with a symptom management, then it is what, between the doctor and the patient as to whether or not how far the patient would like you to go with this?
Yes, yes, because we know that even since, and even regular lesions that are 80-90% blocked, that a lot of the benefit, and this was proven in the COURAGE trial, which was a trial of patients who underwent angiography and had significant lesions, and they were randomized to angioplasty and stenting versus medical therapy, and that there was really no difference in long-term outcomes between the two for stable angina, not acute coronary syndromes or myocardial infarctions that present acutely. Those patients definitely derive a benefit from angioplasty. But the people who have stable angina, there is no life-prolonging aspect to putting in a stent in a stable lesion. Where the difficulty gets is that we have good medicines that can extend your life, but sometimes the medicines make people feel bad. The The beta blockers have a known cause of depression. They cause erectile dysfunction. They cause fatigue. They slow your heart rate down, and you can't mount a heart rate response when you're trying to exercise. Calcium channel blockers cause swelling. Nitrates can cause headache and dizziness, and ranolazine can also sometimes is usually well tolerated, but people do in my practice, they sometimes don't feel good, they feel nauseous on it. So there are side effects of the medicine, and if it controls their chest pain and they're able to tolerate the symptoms, that's fine. However, if they can't tolerate the medicines and they're still having chest pain, something has to be done. And if you talk with the patient and you think that the chest pain is truly angina and you think that chronically occluded artery is the one causing the symptoms, then I think you're very, very much warranted and within the American Cardiology of the American College of Cardiology guidelines for appropriateness to go after that artery if you're someone who has that ability and your cath lab has the equipment to do that.
So why are some interventionalists reluctant to treat CTOs in the cath lab? And also, what do we know about collaterals?
Well, in regard to reluctancy is it takes longer, and it's also all of us were trained in interventional fellowships to do lesions, and we do encounter chronic total occlusions, but with the newer techniques, you have the potential to open these arteries, but it requires more wires that are more expensive, more equipment that is more expensive, just a whole host of these to achieve these success rates, which is now the gold standard. Like I said, in the past, many of the studies showed maybe a 50% success rate with these, and then it went up to like 70-80%, and like I said, the people who do this all the time, it's in the 90% range, which is close to regular angioplasty. But if you're not doing these on a regular basis, there's just no way to achieve that type of success rate. So that's the reluctancy, is the time involved, and the lack of equipment that most cath labs in the country. I mean, it took us at UAB 2 to 3 years to get all the equipment we needed, because you do a case and everything would go well, and then you say, oh, I didn't need that one, but the next case you did, you're like, oh, I think I should use this, and then you have to purchase that equipment, and it's not used all the time, so it's a fairly expensive proposition to have a lab that's equipped to do all types of CTOs, because there are CTOs are not equivalent. There's some easier CTOs and there's some harder CTOs, and the ones that are harder are the ones that require more equipment. So I think the reluctancy is just skill level, equipment, time involved. I mean, some of these procedures can take 2 to 3 hours or longer to get through. So it's very difficult for a busy practitioner to invest that time, and also it backs up the cath lab. So you have to kind of have a dedicated day, a dedicated time, and a dedicated staff. So this isn't just your garden variety straightforward type A lesion. A lot of the times, these require an enormous investment in skills and building your skills, and then also building your staff around you who are invested in the procedure, because they have to stand there for 2 to 3 hours with you watching you try to open this artery. So those are all the kind of impediments to doing this on a regular basis. And then the collaterals is an interesting, and that was what also impeded people from doing these in the past. They go, well, you built your own, quote, mini bypasses, quote, quote. You'll hear that from many patients, and that there is, they do provide flow to the artery through different channels that build up ischemia in the artery, in the heart. The heart is very good at preserving itself. So if you have ischemia, meaning lack of blood flow, then you're going to build these collaterals. But the collaterals are not adequate sometimes enough to support someone who is active. And that's where the fork in the road is that if you have someone who's sitting on a couch and not particularly active, they probably won't get chest pain. But if they want to be active, work in the yard, exercise, and they have a CTO, the collaterals are not adequate to overcome activity. So the heart needs more oxygen during activity, so the collaterals are not adequate to do that. And that was proven in a trial that I reviewed in 2006 where they did fractional flow reserve measurement across the chronic total occlusion after they crossed. And they recognized that with fractional flow reserve that the collaterals were not adequate enough to bring blood flow to that distal bed of the artery. Yes, that kept the muscle alive. Yes, they didn't infarct, but it was not adequate enough to suppress symptoms, especially during activity. So people, and sometimes I see it, if there's really, really good collaterals to that vessel, you sometimes go, oh, they'll probably be fine. But we're still... But if someone's symptomatic, they're obviously not adequate. But we're still working on whether, in the future, whether opening these arteries will improve long-term outcomes, meaning death, myocardial infarction, and major adverse cardiac events.
So wrap it up for us, Dr. Sass. What would you like other physicians to know about CTO and treatments and whether to treat or not, and when to refer to a specialist?
Well, I think the thing that they have to know is that the techniques are out there to open these arteries, and there are training centers that the people who do these all the time are very, very giving of their skills and knowledge to get the adequate training, because if you weren't trained in your fellowship, you have to go back and get more training from people. And I go to many conferences on these and learn something each time, even though I've been doing this for 12 years now. I didn't learn these techniques in my fellowship, so I had to kind of evolve on-the-job training. So it is out there. The other thing is that if their lab is not set up for that, it may be not ideal to attempt really difficult CTOs, and that's when it's time to refer. And because, it's a huge time investment and a huge capital investment in making sure your lab is equipped properly.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sass, for being with us today. What an interesting topic. And a community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Call. Thanks so much for listening.